Hello there and welcome to the No Script Show. In the last episode, we talked about creating a website owner's manual. This is an editable document that is both an online brand guideline and a checklist for creating a website and online presence. In this episode, we're looking at content design, which is a relatively new discipline, and it's one of the main pillars of the website owner's manual. We'll talk about what it is, why it matters, what are its core principles, and how a website owner can apply them. You can find all of the show notes and resources, which we mentioned in this episode, at noscript.show/30. And if you're watching on YouTube, the link for that will be in the first comment just below the like and subscribe buttons. And as always, I'm joined by David Wormsley. Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, thanks, Nathan. Yeah, I'm very well. I thought this year we were going to be just doing a kind of content on building websites. That was the plan. Start with that plumber site, which we started there. And then we moved into this idea of this kind of owner's manual. And, well, I'm kind of pleased because it's this show, I think, was always about kind of looking outside of the world that we knew, which was kind of WordPress and page builders and all that, and seeing what was going on kind of more generally in the web and the building. And so we started as off with the kind of modern CSS. And then, you know, as soon as we got into that, and that's changed so much because of browser interoperability, then suddenly I think our content started moving towards, well, wait, we ought to try and look at the HTML before we move on to the CSS.
Right.
So we've moved into that. And now I think I've gone one step back even further to say, well, hang on, perhaps we ought to decide why we're actually putting this HTML out in the first place and what our thinking is. So I'm quite pleased. So I think our content will take this kind of idea, this concept of a website owner's manual, and then we should cover all aspects of this kind of profession, I think, one way.
Yes.
With this. So,
I'm going to rename you David Derailed Wormsley. That's what's happening.
I'm trying to make sense of it because I've gone off on so many different tangents. I said, oh, the show's going to be about this, and it's going to be about... But I think I finally got there. We've just stepped back enough to get back to some of the fundamentals. Yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely. Okay, so shall I put the slides up? Would that be helpful?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Are you on the correct one for now? Let's see if we can find
you.
There we go. Content design, giving users what they need, when and how they need it. It's a lordy claim, David. It's a, it's a lot in that.
I'll move to the next slide here, which I just got. So the website owner's manual, which we featured, started working on it. It's work in progress at the moment. But in that is going to be a link, and hopefully this episode will be one of the resources that I can link to on the preface. People who are listening to this won't be able to see the slides, but showing the first few pages of the website owner's manual. And there's a selection of standards there, which I thought we would cover now. And these are, if you like, these are kind of going to form the pillars of the manual. They give it some academic weight. So it'll talk about, you know, where these kind of philosophies and these ideas and standards come from. We've already talked about one of those, which is IndieWeb, which actually turned out to be our most popular video so far.
Oh, right. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, by far. I don't know why people tuned into that, so it's probably of interest. And this one is obviously content design, which is a fairly new thing, which is really about meeting actual needs. So we'll do something on the others, which you can't see probably over here. I don't know if you see my little pointer.
I can actually see your little pointer. Yeah, you're hovering over the preface section, aren't you? The standards.
Yeah, so I put standards. So we'll have links in the manual that will go to these videos and some other resources. But in there is content design, the indie web, inclusive design, which is all about designing for all and reaching more people, web standards, which is about building resilient sites and keeping the web interoperable and open. And then there'll be, I think we should do a video as well on agile development, which is really about kind of being adaptable, if you like, to change, which is always going on when it comes to technology and not wasting money. So
so
that's just to put that in context. Let's move on to the actual slides, where I'm going to hand it over mostly to you.
Okay, so we are on the content design slide. Shall I just go through the bullet points? Would that be helpful?
Yes, please.
Okay, so first of all, we're looking at a picture of Sarah Winters, and David's covering her up now. Sorry about that, Sarah. So content design, this is a discipline created by Sarah Richards, who is now Sarah Winters, whilst transforming the gov.uk website from hundreds of government websites into a single resource. Being a user of those websites, well, we'll get onto that, but it's blooming good. It has been adopted by other governments such as the United States, Australia, and New Zealand. Facebook, or Meta, I suppose more correctly, formally switched to content design, embedding content designers across every product team, and a whole bunch of other giant companies like Shopify, Atlassian, Apple, Google, Microsoft have also followed suit. I actually didn't know about the sort of cascade of the government in the UK doing this, and then the US, Australia, and New Zealand kind of tweaking their operations in the same way. That's kind of curious.
Yeah, I think the gov.uk site has really changed the industry, at least at the high end. I think, you know, for most people sort of building small business websites, probably not even aware of the sort of impact of it. And so content design itself is, it's a formal discipline that's pioneered by gov.uk, or the government digital services as they are. So they've been adopted, as you say, by the, you know, the US, their digital services, as well as the Australian government. And I mean, I'll probably mention this later as we go on through the slides, but really, I think without gov.uk, we wouldn't have got the growth of things like Agile as well, you know, this kind of new approach to building websites, very user-focused and adaptable way of building websites. We used to see them as projects that had a set amount of money to be paid on them, and that was it. You know, you planned it and that was done.
I didn't realize that. So the gov.uk website was a sort of pioneer in that whole field of Agile, was it? That was one of the...
Agile goes back 20... I mean, we're going back to... 2013 when they started with it, but it was such a big break to find someone like UK government of all people who are genuinely would expect with governments, they want to know what they're paying for up front with public money. They want a set price for everything. And when you accept Agile, you accept the fact that there is no actual end price for this one. You just keep reiterating as much as is needed to do the job. And hopefully it will be a saving in the long term rather than these projects. And so to take that kind of risk to move for a big organization like the UK government to do that was major in backing up, if you like, other people doing Agile. And now, you know, most companies, I think, who've got serious online presence will use Agile as a way of developing their sites.
Yeah, it, I guess it stems from the fact that the web has gone from something which was nice to have into something which is certainly in terms of the UK government website is necessary to have, isn't it? It's like a utility, basically. There's so much functionality of normal life, paying taxes and booking driving tests, as we'll see in a minute, that kind of thing. It's moved over there. And so in a sense, it becomes like another branch of government, which in the UK, we have this thing called the NHS, which is the health service. It doesn't have an end. You know, there's no pot of gold which runs out. It, you know, every year there's a further spend on the NHS, and next year there's more money, and next year there's more money. And so it's like that. It's just now a thing which you have to pay for each and every year. Anyway, sorry, I digress.
No, it's fine. I mean, the other points that I need to cover is just that the gov.uk replaced over 300 individual agencies that were working. They did it over 18-month period, so it finished in sort of late 2014, and it merged thousands of websites. And I'm just bringing it up on the screen here.
I see.
So the argument from Sarah Winters was that with kind of government sites, if they were complex, then users need to turn to third-party copycat sites to be able to do things. Which she says, well, I'm quoting her, is that this made a tax on the poor or the confused. And her prime example for pushing this forward was booking a driving test, something which, Nathan, you were telling me you've just done, actually.
Literally did it like a few weeks ago for my youngest son, and it took minutes, like minutes from Googling. So, you know, I didn't know where the URL was or anything like that, from Googling it to completing it, paying for it, having it booked, and it's in the calendar. 4 minutes, maybe, something like that. I had to have a few bits lying around, like my, you know, my son's driving license number. But really, beyond that, everything was just so self-explanatory. It was dead simple. It was a breath of fresh air, actually. And also, what's curious about that is that is now the bar that I've set myself for this website. It's always simple.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
No. So what I was going to say is that that was really one of our examples that previously that's what you would need to do, is that you would need to go to a third party most of the time. Or most people were, to book the driving test, which was more expensive because you're paying this third party, where now, of course, everyone will go to the gov.uk site. And we were talking about this because you've been getting a visa for India, and that's been quite a hassle. And I know, being in India at the moment, that obviously they haven't adopted this process here. So literally everything you do, you go through a third party here. If you want a visa, if you want your sort of ID cards that we have here, you know, the sort of ration cards as well that they still have over here, you do everything by third parties because the websites are just a jumble.
Right.
Different sites.
Well,
on the slide here, I've just got some examples on it. And it's because I was listening to an interview that she did, Sarah Winters, that is. And she was mentioning in that there were, before, 3,500 government websites that were put into one. So it's not just these 300 bodies. And, you know, most of them had their own teams. And one that she mentioned before, so I looked them up and I've got them on the screen for people who can see it, is one called beefyandlammy.co.uk. It's now deceased. Do you remember this at all?
No, but when I saw this slide, it made me kind of chuckle that what the heck was the government paying for this for? I mean, I can sort of get it, but equally, it's like they've got some famous people to do cooking. But not exactly famous chefs to do cooking. Anyway, go on.
It's 80s cricket stars. It's kind of Ian Botham and Alan Lamb. And honestly, it's worth going to YouTube and looking up Beefy and Lammy and listening to some of these old, because it comes from the TV ads that they used to do where they were trying to promote quality lamb and beef to have all at the time. And they really are sort of the saucy British postcard type stuff. The sort of real double entendres in them. It's hysterical. Yeah. But I mean, you know, absolutely the point that she was making, why are the UK government giving you, because they needed to fill up this website, they're giving you recipes to what to do with this lamb, this beef that they're promoting.
3,500 though, that's so interesting. So that's 3,500, maybe not 3,500 exactly, but many thousands of independent agencies, all with their own sort of quirky design language, ways of doing things, tech stack, you know, the whole thing is a mess. I suppose you had to go through that, though. You know, the internet came along. Nobody knew how it would be needed by the population in general for booking a driving test, as an example. And now we've reached the point where it's matured enough that we now know that this sort of stuff really is best handled by one entity. Well, I assume it is anyway, if done right.
Yeah. And the other thing about gov.uk is that it's the only website to date who's won the prestigious Design Museum's Design of the Year Award, which it won back in 2013, even before the job had been completed. So, and I kind of like this, you know, this is the way that I could, because in this present age, we, you know, particularly with AI, our AI will create you this wonderful looking website. I think sometimes we just still get stuck in this idea that websites are these pretty pictures online rather than something which actually helps people with their lives and communicates, you know, useful information. And I think, you know, you can tell when you look at this site, you couldn't be more bare bones, but it's more useful than, say, Beefy and Lammy when we're looking at these two comparisons.
You're right. So we're looking at a page which is basically a white canvas with black text of varying sizes, some links and a few buttons. But the point is, I don't need images and fun overlapping kind of containers and CSS grid and this, that, and the other thing. I just need to know how to book a driving test. And that apparently can be done in 5 or 6 steps. And it makes that right, you know, that case right at the beginning. And it really didn't occur to me how profoundly great that website was until you started sort of explaining it in these videos. And now I get it. Now I'm appreciative of it. And it's beauty is in its simplicity, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's usability.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Let's go on. I'll leave the slide for you to read out, just explaining what it is.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. So we require a different way of thinking. So sort of following on, I suppose, a little bit from what we were just talking about. Here's three bullet points for you. Content is not written first in this process and designed second. Both happen at the same time together, and it is all shaped by evidence. And the format, so that could be words, videos, a tool, table, or nothing, is a design decision, not a default. You'll have to explain that one to me. And the third one, the goal is to meet a genuine user need. I think we just covered a little bit, not to fill a page or promote the organization. Yeah. Okay. So let's tackle those, but particularly number two is confusing to me.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think... I mean, it all kind of clicked with me, what she was saying with this. And I think it makes context, it makes sense in context to her history. So she's sort of at the point as Sarah Winters, who's kind of come up with this idea that we should be doing content design, is the fact that she was a copywriter, but originally she went into design and she was doing copywriting. So when you've got this job of bringing together all of this copy from all of these different sites to put it in there, you realize that it doesn't really make sense to have this, and then you design over the top. So this is the problem I've been having recently, and why it clicked with me is because as a reaction to coming from page builders and templates, I've been keen to get back to designing to content. So I now recently been saying, we need the content, we need good HTML, and then we design over the top of this. But in actual reality, you're doing two things at the same time with it, because you already know that you're making design decisions. So a couple of episodes ago, I did that kind of single page website for Paul the plumber.
Yeah, the plumber.
I was sort of indicating that if you wrote the text down in a normal thing, then you can style it and you're done. But actually there's a bit of a cheat in that, because I already knew, because I had the design, because I'm the designer and the copywriter, I already knew that I was going to put this hide and reveal with this summary and detail section in there. So I think what this is saying here is that you can't sort of separate the content from the design, because the way that you might want to give that content, you want it in its simplest form.
And
to that degree, you need to understand design. You know, you need to know that you can make this one sentence huge, you know, or that you can put things into lists, or that you can hide and reveal certain stuff. You need to know that. So
that's a really easy thing to say, isn't it? But quite hard to make the shift into actually implementing that, because the temptation is always to go for one or the other, you know, like get this pixel perfect magazine style layout, and then, oh, darn it, the text which has been supplied by the client doesn't fit, so we'll reduce the font size a bit and in it will go, and we'll be very happy. Yeah. But if you do it the other way around, then you know you get the text, and then you've got to sort of worry about it fitting in that government website. I suppose they've got the perfect they've fixed it perfectly by just basically obliterating design. You know, that there is design there, but it's very minimal, it's basically text. And so the text is front and center, it's everything. So there's no real imagery or anything like that that they've got to worry about. So they've made it easier for themselves in that scenario. But I can imagine that there'd be collisions with this approach at some point. But that's the whole point of the modern web, is that you can adapt your designs based upon the size of everything. You know, the size of the text can map to the size of the viewport and things like that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, on that second point, the format, you know, you need to... If you consider there is content design, and that's important at all stages through the development of a website, and even as it keeps changing, that should always be there present. It, you know, it does make sense, because sometimes, you know, you, as a copywriter, it would be pointless her just writing out when you would be saying, no, a table or a chart or something would convey this information much better than, you know, just words, even though, you know, 95% of the web is words, but sometimes,
it was okay. I think I'm following what you were talking about there then. So it's the not a default bit at the end, which I've now understood. Okay, thank you.
That's really what it is. Let me move on to next
Okay. Shall I read those ones out as well?
Yes,
so this really is an exploration of why it may matter. So most websites are written inside out, reflecting what the organization wants to say. Content design flips that and starts with what users are actually trying to do. Let me pause and think about that for a moment. Yes. Okay, great. So three bullet points. The first one, we create content because there is a real user need for it, not because it feels like something we should have. That's harder than it sounds, isn't it? Especially if you've got clients breathing down your neck. Sorry, I'll keep going. We choose the right format for the job, whether that is a short paragraph, a list, a video, or a single direct answer. And the final one, we treat content as a live thing that can be improved, pruned, removed, whatever, when it stops serving users. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is, again, flipping it. And of course, that's what gov.uk is known for. It's been user-focused, you know, so everything is put through that lens. And, you know, there's nothing new about this kind of content design in a way, because it's already there in things that people all observe in SEO and UX design anyway. And, you know, you could say it is UX design, a lot of it. But I think what sort of makes it different is that, well, certainly with SEO, you will probably look for content gaps, but you're probably unlikely to be thinking about how you're going to be removing data that is no longer of use. If you get an SEO, they're not going to be doing that. And with a UX designer or something, they're going to make what content comes to them easier to consume in their design. They're going to be saying, okay, this is the written word I've got from Sarah and I'll make it beautiful. But they're not, it doesn't feel like it's their remit to be able to question the validity of whether that actual data was needed in the first place, whether it should be on the site. And that's
right
where this comes at it, because it's more brutal than that. It takes you back further. It says, does the user need this? Do they need all of that?
Yeah.
And if they don't need it any longer, take it away, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's different. And, you know, and we are used to saying, oh, we need to give them this. This is what we, you know, about us. But, you know, if we want to serve our customers, we actually have to think about what the customer's needs are, don't we, rather than...
Yeah, that is a conversation that I basically never had. I was far too cowardly to push back on what I was told to deliver. I just, I'll do that. But it's good to have that prism in your head to know that that's a skill that you ought to be able to deploy back to the client, you know, to tell them, do you really need that? It's not really serving your users. It might look flashy and lovely, but is anybody actually gaining any benefit out of it? Okay.
Yeah. And there's, in a way, there's not that much that is new other than the fact that you're flipping things around, I think, in this whole process. Because, I mean, I looked at her book. Sarah has a book, Design, Content Design. And she talks about things that we've known for ages. And I forgot the name of the guy who brought this idea in. When we went digital for the first time, the big difference was push and pull marketing. And she talks about that a lot in this. It frames this, the fact that we've moved from this idea where previously when we marketed to people, we pushed out our messages. And now with the job online is that we have to pull people in with what they need. Who is the guy?
That's not a piece of knowledge I've ever known, I don't think, but that's interesting. Maybe when you finally get the name after we click stop.
Big friend of WordPress, you'll know him. It doesn't matter. His name came to mind. But he's the guy who kind of coined that push and pull. So she's still working on that kind of thing, this, you know, getting the men. I think it's taken us so many years to kind of get the mentality of the digital world right. You know, we sort of slowly slip from print and marketing out to this. And so there's not much that's actually new. Anyway, let me move on to next slide.
Okay, so we're now looking at core principles. And what we've said here is all content should answer a real question or help complete a task. Check, that makes sense. Decisions are based on research and audience, not internal preference. Words are not always the answer. Consider tables, checklists and visuals. Use words the audience uses, not jargon, brand or insider terminology. I think the gov.uk website is pretty good with that. Unclear content erodes trust. Be consistent, accurate and honest. And the final one, content should be planned, reviewed, and retired, not forgotten. Okay, over to you.
I guess we've not anything new that we're saying here. This is just the core principles with it. And, you know, I mean, the only thing I can add in here really is that the gov.uk site is kind of considered as the gold standard for anybody doing content design. And actually, I don't think I mentioned this in the notes. It will be there in the links, but you can kind of learn all you need to do about the process by going to the gov.uk site anyway, because all of their principles, all of their design systems are something you can follow yourself anyway. So you can learn everything you need from there. Let me move on to the next slide. Oh, there's just a couple of examples here I've put on the slide.
This is great. I love this. It's just so handy, unnecessarily helpful. Let's frame it up.
Yeah, for people on the audio, I mean, there's just two screenshots I've taken of the page, one page where it's got the UK bank holidays, and the other one is checking whether you need a UK visa. And I just thought I'd put these up as a couple of examples, because following their sort of principles, it's very clear to me that when you type in you want to know about UK bank holidays, what you'll primarily probably want to know is the next one.
Right. So that's exactly
Exactly. And so that's got a nice big block where it calls it out to you before you get the table of all the rest of the stuff and for the next year as well on there. Where I think, you know, without this sort of thinking, you'd probably just put your table there, wouldn't you?
And you'd have to go through, and the old ones would be, you know, you'd have like 17 at the top that have already gone into the past that are not necessary and so on. Yeah, it's great. Really, really good. And it looks like we got a holiday tomorrow, which is quite nice.
Exactly. This will probably go out on the holiday.
So,
and the other one was just typical of these, as many of these ones start now. So check if you need a UK visa. And there's these conversational forms where you click on it, it asks you the relevant questions, you fill in. So it leads you to where you want to get your answer. Instead of my, you know, Indian example of having to go to various different sites, download PDFs to try and see if the published date reflects what I should be doing at this particular moment. This guides you through, and you can trust it. You know that this is going to ask you all the main questions to be able to steer you in the right direction.
So this happens a lot on that website. So you end up on this website usually because you've got a task that you need to complete. There's a goal, like it might be filing the taxes or booking a driving test or whatever it may be. And it very often begins with this start now process. So you click the start now button, and then you are asked a bunch of questions. And although at the time you kind of think, why do I need to do this? What you quickly work out is, okay, I've just eliminated an hour of searching, because that process gets you to where you need to then begin. And it's really easy to ignore the fact that it's really helpful, but it's brilliantly helpful, you know. So here, you know, with the start now with the visa thing, it will probably ask you a bunch of questions to just save you time, to avoid the things that you don't need to do, and maybe it'll ask you where you're going or where you're coming from and things like that. It's brilliantly done.
Yeah, it's just great design, isn't it? And I think this is what, you know, I think it's so forgotten that this is web design. You know, it's not pretty, but it's functional, it's proper design, it solves the problem.
Yeah, and the curious thing here is as well, is that you're, how to describe it, you're making it so that the complexity disappears and nobody will ever know or thank you for that work, because you'll never reveal to them the hours that you saved them. And yet there you have saved them hours. And I told you about the process I've had getting my visa for India, and that's been anything other than fun. Nobody helped you at all. Oldest drawing.
Sad thing, good design is invisible, isn't it?
Yeah, right. There you go. You've encapsulated it in one perfect sentence. Lovely. So two good examples there. Okay. Should I read these ones out as well?
Yes, please.
Okay, so this is how website owners might be able to apply this. So before writing anything, ask, what does the user need to know or do here? I think we just saw a good example of that. Look for evidence, search queries, customer questions, or analytics. Use plain language, avoid jargon, and provide meaningful headings. Choose the simplest format. That's the win, that one, isn't it? If a list works better than prose, use a list. Remove or update content that is rarely visited or no longer relevant. And when in doubt, cut. Short and clear tends to perform better. nicely done. That's encapsulated beautifully.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, one of the things I think that always makes me take a deep breath is when anything's saying, look for research and evidence.
Yeah, it's easy to write that sentence. It's so hard to...
To try and get a client to think about what evidence do we have. But, you know, it happens. And I was just doing this and one of my clients contacted me and I thought this was quite funny, really, because they contacted me to ask me why they were getting lots of inquiries from people who thought their services might be free. They were offering counseling services. And it just seemed so funny because it hadn't occurred to me, to them, that they might just ask the person providing this information how valuable that might be, why they've done this. You know, if you was to reply back to them and say, no, we don't, but I mean, maybe you want to look here or something like that, but can I ask you why? You know, I mean, I have my own theory on it, is the fact that their site, they're in a small area and their site looks creditable enough. It's a center to look like it might be the center for private and for public stuff as well. That's okay, what my guess would be, is the design of the site. But it's just incredible that people, in my experience, that it's really difficult. They often know sometimes through conversations, but forgotten it, but that clients know more about their clients and their confusion, that, but they don't let you know as a designer, and it could be so useful, you know, to...
Interesting.
And that kind of stuff. But also, the whole removing stuff is interesting because I've only ever done this once, actually. It's a redesign of somebody's site, and this goes way back to that sort of time when the way we thought we could do best with traffic and Google is to have as many different posts as you possibly could.
Oh, yeah.
And to get as many different keywords featured as you possibly could. And it was generally short content. And we know that Google now doesn't like this low quality content any longer. It wants, you know, so I went about chopping. So it chopped, there was about 300 plus posts on there, and I chopped about 200 of them and just killed them, and it scared the life out of me. But mostly it was justified because there was broken links and everything. It was doing them more damage.
Okay, that's really interesting. Also, it's kind of the invisible, boring work that sometimes you have to do. You know, you're not, I mean, maybe you will, but it doesn't feel like something you're particularly going to get paid for is cutting work. But if the bigger picture is to have a successful website, and you now know that Google doesn't look favorably on the keyword stuffing, let's have a load of meaningless blog posts that really don't help anything, then that is necessary work. But I can see that being one that gets dropped really quickly by the client paying the web developer, sort of thing, because I don't know, it's just, who wants to pay to get stuff cut? But it is very important.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with a lot of these principles that we're looking at, I think, you know, there's a good argument to have this sort of annual thing where you look down a list of stuff, which I need to do out this manual in the end, where you look at it and go, okay, what things might need to change in for this next year, because they just go on for years and years, and some of that might be chopping it. But the interesting thing was, even though I was scared stiff of removing, because this site did really well with its traffic, and largely I had some statistics so I could see which posts were particularly doing it, and actually it was only a couple of posts that were bringing in most of the traffic anyway.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it wasn't really relevant to them. It was from, you know, a country that wouldn't be where their services were anyway. But still, you know, it's interesting. It made no difference to the traffic at all, chopping these down. So it was quite...
Well, that's good. You did well there, David. Well done.
Well, I didn't damage them.
No. Okay.
Okay, I'll move on. We're actually done. I've just put here this, I mean, those who are watching on YouTube will see there's some links, but they will be there in our show notes here. But as I mentioned, I think, you know, there is the gov.uk site, and if you go to the link that's there, it actually gives you all the guidance you need if you want to get into content design.
So you're going to bury those in the comments on the YouTube, are you, and also on the website? If people go to, noscript.show/330. Okay.
And some really good resources there, and some videos as well with Sarah Richards as well talking about it. But I think... Yeah, it's really, it's helped me, just that idea of trying to work out a process for the web, where thinking I'd previously with page builders, I was looking visually and then cramming in the content. Then I thought, that's wrong. I need to get the content and then put the design on it. And now this has challenged that to make me think, actually, no, the two processes go together. You're constantly thinking about the design and the content at the same time.
Yeah, I think that distills it perfectly, doesn't it? That's kind of the summation of what you're talking about. It's agile, ongoing conversation. Is that it? Are we done? Crikey.
We are done.
That's got to be the shortest episode we've done in ages.
I know. And the next one will be, I think, we'll come back with one of the next pillars. I think we'll do inclusive design, because that's all about designing for diversity, designing for everybody.
Nicely said, David, with passion. Love it. So I will literally see you soon.
Yeah, you will. Yes. Over here.
Okay. Thanks, David. Take it easy.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.